So there are a range of intermediate steps. I'll just quickly talk about a couple of them. There's a lot of studies of this idea of tenure security, which show very clearly that actually it's a psychosocial phenomenon. That is, that people who feel they're secure tend to invest more in their property, do more work in terms of disaster risk reduction. They tend to engage more with the local community in terms of activities like resisting the state or resisting evictions or engaging in improving disaster resilience. So if people perceive they've got tenure security, it's a start. In Indonesia, there are studies which show that if you have a house number in these informal settlements, that actually that's a major issue. If you can get from the local government a house number, they, even though technically it's not a right to the land, it does have these impacts on their behaviour. Now, it's not ideal, but if you can't go anywhere else, that's the starting point. Being on the electoral roll is another one that's important in Indonesia. They say this talk here about customary, recognised customary rights. Yeah, it can be an obviously important non-urban context. Urban context in the Pacific, for example, look at Honiara, Solomon Islands. What you have is these enclaves of alienated land that were alienated during colonial times, and outside of those areas is customary land, okay? And there's restrictions on alienation of customary land. Now, what that means is that the urban area is fixed in legal terms, and so all the informal settlements develop outside that area in customary areas, where technically the transactions are illegal, and this contributes to the informal status of the settlements and the vulnerability. So I've just got a question mark customary. I'm a big fan of recognised customary tenure, but you have to have mechanisms to handle the emergence of land markets. No, I'm talking about that. Occupancy, obviously, in some areas like, say, Honiara, we also use them in Dili. They're not a perfect tool, but these were temporary occupation licences. So in Dili and East Timor, people who moved into houses that had been vacated after 1999, and they were not the pre-1999 owners, they got temporary occupation licences because there was a way to capture them in a system of recording. And I was a big fan of it at the time because one of the problems with circumstances of chronic displacement, of long-term displacement, is that transactions develop in that sector over land. And if you have no mechanism to capture and record the details of those transactions, what you tend to get is a huge amount of disputes developing. So the idea of temporary occupation licences was explicitly stated you get no rights to the land, but you got a little bit of paper from the state, and in return the state got a record of who's there, which if you want to incorporate them into the formal system, it's an important tool. However, TOLs are also a socially divisive instrument, and in Dili, the people who had been dispossessed in 1999 felt that it was legitimating ad hoc claimants, and some people say it's a factor in the housing conflict in 2007. So these tools, as I say, they're not neutral tools. I'm not recommending them as being, your ideal. Every tool has its costs and benefits. I like anti-eviction law. You have quite strong anti-eviction safeguards in the Philippines under the National Housing Act. But the problem is that anti-eviction laws are rarely applied. and that's an advocacy issue, an access to justice issue. But I think anti-eviction laws, you know, there's safeguards on evictions, so basically periods of notice, requirements that evictions can't go ahead unless there's alternative residence, you know, this type of thing. I can give more examples later if you like. But I think they're a useful intermediate tool. Adverse possession, you have a rule of adverse possession is a rule that if you've been in possession of land for a certain number of years, you become the owner of that land, even if there was another owner. So long-term possession leads to ownership. And that's the rule now in Cambodia and in East Timor. I kind of like it as a post-conflict land rule. The alternative is so-called restitution, where the displaced are allowed to go home. And restitution, you'll see a lot of talk about that in international law. But the reality in a place like Cambodia and East Timor is which displaced person goes home. Because there's layers of displacement and categories of displacement and long-term flows of population movement, as in Afghanistan as well. And restitution can stuff up your shelter program big time, because you sit around, the lawyers sit around trying to work out who owned the property 5 years ago. And in the meantime, there's a lot of tension and there's people in circumstances of temporary shelter. So I think when you have intractable, complex displacement circumstances, a clean slate possession approach has its advantages, and I certainly argue for it in East Timor. However, the experience from both Cambodia and East Timor is that the rule gets manipulated by the political elite. So what tends to happen is the proof of who has been in possession becomes a vehicle for powerful interests to claim that they've been in possession for a long period. So again, it's not a neutral, perfect tool.